Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 201 in the series. We are now producing these in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR.FM. The school committee held their third annual legislative forum on Tuesday, February 4, 2020. In the lecture hall at Franklin High School, school committee chair Ann Bergen opened the session. Superintendent Sarah Ahern provided some opening remarks before handing the microphone over to Denise Spencer, who facilitated the remainder of the forum. She introduced Senate President Karen Spilka, Senator Rebecca Rausch, and Representative Jeff Roy. Each had a few minutes for opening remarks before answering questions prepared by the school committee and then questions from the audience. About 60 people participated for this forum, which is more than each of the prior two forums. So without further ado, here's the recording for the meeting, which runs approximately 80 minutes.
Okay, I think we're ready. We're just waiting. Karen Spilka is on her way, I'm sure, so we'll start because we want to try to end on time. So, here we go. I'm Ann Bergen on behalf of the entire school committee. I welcome all of you to our third annual legislative forum. The Community Relations Subcommittee, under the leadership of its chair, Denise Spencer, along with Judith Ponfeffer, have put this evening together for us. Denise will be moderating our event this evening and will formally introduce our legislators who so graciously appeared tonight without hesitating a second when we asked them to come.
Said,
no, there was no hesitation. At least, yeah.
No,
anyway.
I was just making it.
Yes, it was very funny, too. All right. I also want to welcome members of the Town Council, FinCom, educational leaders in our community, including Dr. Hearn and all of you who cared enough to come out tonight. Part of the mission of community relations is also public schools advocacy, obligatory in the birthplace of Horace Mann. My very brief, 5-minute part of the program, reminding people always of the importance of public schools in a democratic society, why all citizens, whether you have kids in school or not, understand the obligation to give the next generation and future generations every chance for success, and also understanding that we are handing the leadership of this precious country over to the next generation. It is understanding not only the importance of academic success, but also what happens when kids from all walks of life, from all cultural backgrounds, come together in work and play. It's about tolerance, respect, wisdom, compassion, and empathy. We can't call ourselves successful as educators if we don't support families in instilling those values and attributes as well. But we know from two widely respected, fiscally conservative town administrators, Jeff Nutting, who recently retired, and now Jamie Helen, who's here this evening, that as the cost of everything soars around us and we are limited by what revenues we take in, it is only a matter of time that communities feel the consequences in a gradual deterioration of town services. As school committee members, we have for the last few years been open and transparent about the fiscal issues facing our town and consequently our schools. We have been asked to essentially live with a level service budget while costs of everything around us soar. For a time, in the 1990s, we had a large influx of state funding. I can speak from my own perspective as a middle school principal. We were able to create a program that included French, Spanish, Latin, a sixth grade world language exploratory program, home economics, general music, technology education, a solid phys ed and health program, a librarian in our beautiful library with no fees for transportation, welcome, and activities. Gradually, over time, as we worked to close budget gaps, we lost French, Latin, our sixth grade world language exploratory program, home economics, our librarian. We had to reduce time for physical education, health, and have watched fees increase for activities and transportation. And that's just at the middle level. As I gather data tonight, I consulted the school financial report of Millis just to get some comparison. In their report, They listed all of the surrounding towns that spend more per pupil. There were only three communities Millis listed below their town in per pupil spending. Dead last of those three communities was Franklin. This isn't a sky is falling diatribe. We are an extraordinary school system, but we have to keep it that way. It's a warning. All one has to do is look at the trajectory of communities when they don't support their schools. We have to stay competitive, providing the opportunities that keep our kids competitive. It means attracting and retaining the best teachers and educational leaders, but also thinking about all those extraordinary people who are part of our schools, our educational support personnel, bus drivers, van drivers, custodians, secretaries, cafeteria workers. We need to show our concern and care for them. It's not about providing extravagant wages, just competitive ones. It's about also understanding what huge demands are now being placed on schools. Society's issues have become issues for the schools to solve. Mental health issues have become alarming in today's world. It's a national issue, a state issue, a town issue. But it seems as if the responsibility is overwhelmingly falling on schools to address those needs. Throw in vaping and the whole opioid crisis as well. Think of all the resources that are needed in schools to address just these issues. Issues that impact all socioeconomic levels. Kids attending all schools. This just isn't a public school issue. This is happening everywhere. Finally, we have to pay attention to the toll huge top-down demands and excessive regulation are taking on educators and our kids. We have to look out for the welfare of our educators, as fewer and fewer people are choosing education as a profession or staying in the profession. If you want to know the importance of quality teachers in the lives of our students, just ask those kids. And finally, there are those who say people need to feel the pain before they're willing to invest more in schools, and that is a reasonable argument. Except, how many people with means hang around and watch their kids suffer, do without what they know will be critical for their success? Answer, they don't. They take their kids out of public schools, and they no longer come to our town. Good, strong schools are a magnet. So as the budget process unfolds, we will keep you fully updated and ask you to attend hearings and ask questions. There is no doubt that everyone here loves and supports our community. We want to keep it strong and vibrant and growing. And speaking of strong educational leaders, I'm going to ask you to welcome Sarah Ahern. Dr. Sarah Ahern is the superintendent of schools, and she's going to follow up and just say a few words before we go move along.
Thank you, Dr. Bergen, and welcome everyone. And I'd like to welcome our legislators here with us this evening. I just have a few remarks to set the stage and set some context around tonight's conversation. It's really heartwarming to come together around a collective vision and mission for our work in the public schools. As a community, cultivating each student's intellectual, social, emotional, and physical potential. And we have partners with our state legislators in doing just that. And together, we work towards our four district and school improvement goals around the social and emotional well-being of students and staff, rigorous and engaging curriculum, personalized learning and to meet the instructional needs of each student and each learner, and doing so in a way that cultivates two-way communication among stakeholders. I imagine that a lot of the conversation tonight will center on some groundbreaking legislation that has happened across Massachusetts called the Student Opportunity Act. At last year's legislative forum, we talked a bit about the outcomes of the Foundation Budget Review Commission, and the legislature has been hard at work over the last session to work on this groundbreaking legislation, which is designed towards providing additional education funding to all districts and all students in the Commonwealth. It is based on additional funding to support students with various learning needs, providing additional circuit breaker funding to support high-cost special education and out-of-district transportation, full funding of charter school tuition reimbursement for incremental costs over a three-year period. And the Student Opportunities Act also includes other measures that I imagine our legislators will talk about this evening. The governor's budget was released last week. The House budget and the Senate budgets will come out later this spring into the summer. And what we are seeing is additional funding to Franklin for Chapter 70 aid. And we anticipate that there will be additional support in the circuit breaker for us as well as other districts across the Commonwealth. One thing to note is that this will be implemented over time. And again, I'm sure this will be a big topic of conversation this evening, and more details will be shared from the state perspective. I want to be sure, though, to highlight for the community ways in which the legislators are supporting the Franklin Public Schools and children here in Franklin. And I picked out a couple bullet points to share with you. In FY20, we had two earmarks to support students in the Franklin Public Schools. The $58,000 earmark for our Substance Abuse Task Force is going towards substance abuse prevention. You may have seen the Ride Home work that has come out of the Substance Abuse Task Force as one of the first measures of that. We also have other educational programming geared towards substance abuse prevention for youth here in Franklin. And then that was from Senator Spilka, who sponsored that. And Senator Roush sponsored a $50,000 earmark to go towards vaping detection and prevention in our middle school and high schools. And we are very thankful to have that, as we know that vaping is such a crisis point for young people, not only here in Franklin, but also elsewhere. Annually, Senator Spilka sponsors a forum for families around social and emotional learning and supporting social emotional learning. And it is one way that we can get some of our resources out to the community. And so we thank Senator Spilka for that. That occurred just a couple weeks ago. And then with Representative Roy, we really are pleased with ongoing contributions and collaborations between the representative and our schools. He participated in our visioning project, Portrait of a Graduate, and was part of the focus groups to develop a list of essential skills that we know students will need for their future. That project is currently out to the community for some feedback. You may have seen that in an email earlier this week. We've had the opportunity, a few school committee members and I have had the opportunity to work with Representative Roy as part of the National Conference of State Legislatures on their personalized student-centered learning initiative work. And last year, Lieutenant Governor Pulido and Representative Roy came and brought awareness around the explicit images legislation, which is of particular concern around teens sharing inappropriate images and not fully understanding the consequences of that. And so we appreciated the opportunity to hear directly from them about this sponsored legislation. So I wanted to highlight some other areas that our legislators are supporting students here in Franklin, and want to be sure to thank them for all that you do. So some themes for tonight. I imagine you'll hear a bit about the Student Opportunity Act, supporting the social emotional needs of children and staff, trends in higher education, and college career and civic readiness, among other topics that they may be interested to share with you. So with that, I will turn it over to Community Relations Chair Denise Spencer to moderate the remainder of the evening. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ahern, and thank you everyone for coming out tonight. We appreciate all the support from the community. I also want to thank Ann Bergen and Judith Pfeffer for helping pull this together. Before I introduce our panel, I want to reiterate some of the themes Sarah touched upon. It's important to remember, particularly this year, the governor's budget just released is the first of three budget proposals, and this is where the conversation starts. We have you all here tonight with our state rep and state senators who are going to put their own budget proposals together, and the time is now to advocate for the town of Franklin. And now I am honored to introduce our state legislators. First, we have Senate President Karen Spilka, who represents the Metro West communities of Ashland, Framingham, Franklin, Holliston, Hopkinton, Medway, and Natick. Before being voted in as president in July 2018, she served as the chair of the Massachusetts Senate Committee on Ways and Means beginning in January 2015. She began her legislative career as a state representative for the 7th Middlesex District in 2001. And prior to that, the Senate president was in private practice as an arbitrator and mediator. Thank you, Karen. Next, Senator Rebecca Rausch, who represents parts of Norfolk, Bristol, and Middlesex counties. Elected in 2018, Rebecca is the chairperson for the Joint Committee on Municipalities, vice chair for the Joint Committee on Elder Affairs, and a member of the Joint Committee on Children, Families, and Persons with Disabilities, Joint Committee on Public Health, Joint Committee on Public Service, Joint Committee on State Administration and Regulatory Oversight, and the Joint Committee on Veterans and Federal Affairs. Thank you, Rebecca, for taking the time to be here. And last but not least, State Representative Jeffrey Roy. Jeff was first elected in 2012, re-elected in 14, 16, and 18, and has most recently been appointed chairperson of the Joint Committee on Higher Education. He is also the House Chair of the Manufacturing Caucus, which promotes and encourages making it in Massachusetts. He also serves as member of the House Committee on Personnel and Administration. Thank you for being here tonight, Jeff. All right, now I'd like to hand it over to our panel who will make their introductory remarks, and then we will get to the questions. I just ask that you keep your introductions to 5 minutes so that we can keep on time, so at the end we have time for citizens' questions.
We still have 30 minutes each.
So Karen, if we could start with you.
Sure, thank you. Thank you so much for having me here this evening. This is actually the first forum that I've participated in since we passed the Student Opportunity Act, or the SOA, as we like to call it. We have acronyms for everything in state government. It's the first overhaul of the whole education funding formula in almost 30 years. And it's a once-in-a-generational education reform, and it made the formula much more adequate. Back around 2006-07, we made it more a little bit more equitable and predictable, but the adequacy had eluded us. This was the reason I originally ran for the legislature in the early 2000s, so it was very exciting for me to be Senate President to really help push it through. Before I dive into that, though, I just want to give a smattering. We do work on other things. I know education is really important, but I just, you know, very quickly want to give you an idea, because we've had a very busy first half of the two-year session. We did a ban on hands-free driving. I hope all of you have your Bluetooths and your attachments so that you no longer hold the phone while you drive. We moved quickly to ban flavored e-cigarettes. And starting on June 1st, menthol cigarettes will no longer be available in Massachusetts. We built the state's rainy day fund to its highest level ever, just short of $3.5 billion. I'd like to get it up even a little bit higher. So we know that it's not a matter of if it's going to happen as a recession, but when. We passed just recently climate change legislation, last week for that matter, putting our state on the path to net zero emissions by 2050. We passed in November major legislation to reduce costs, pharmaceutical costs, and increase access to healthcare pharmaceuticals, including insulin. We put a ban on single-use plastic bags. We passed legislation to strengthen sexual health education. And in the months ahead, I just want to rattle off, we're going to plan on doing transportation funding and policy. Next week, this Thursday, we are releasing a major mental health care reform bill. It's a personal issue to me. We will be debating it next Thursday. We will continue health care issues on banning surprise billing that I'm sure most of you have gotten bills for, and we will do housing legislation. And as mentioned, I'll continue to work on my social and emotional learning. But I just want to highlight the Student Opportunity Act puts a new $1.5 billion with a B into the K-12 education system over a 7-year phase-in. The funds are mostly targeted to school districts that have very high concentrations of low-income students and English language learners. And it's driven by enrollment. So if your enrollment stays the same or goes up, that's what will impact it. Which means, unfortunately, some districts with declining enrollment will not see as much of a big jump in state funds. A couple of things that were important as we were negotiating it was that every single school district in the state benefit from the introduction and the infusion of new funds. We could not put out a bill that unless every single school district benefited. So it would help communities like Franklin. The other two things that I really pushed for, and I honestly had Franklin in mind during the negotiations, were the full reimbursement for the charter schools. You know, I know that has impacted Franklin, and I know that, you know, how it has affected the schools, and it's really important. So I thought it's a three-year phase-in, a full implementation of charter school reimbursement. And then we also made out-of-district transportation costs part of the special education circuit breaker. Prior to this, it was just the curriculum that was covered as part of the circuit breaker, but we knew that so many school districts, for certain children, the transportation costs more than the education costs, so we put the out-of-district transportation into it, and Franklin will benefit from particularly those last two things, the charter reimbursement and the SPED circuit breaker. The estimate for the full phase-in is at least a little over $1 million increase in its funding of what would have happened to the full implementation. So that is my last piece that I want to say. I can talk fast.
Yeah, she's tough. Watch out.
Good job.
Thank you.
Rebecca?
She's back.
I know.
Good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here with you tonight, and a pleasure and privilege to serve on this particular legislative delegation. You've heard a lot about the Student Opportunity Act from Senator Spilka, so I won't repeat that. Obviously, that was a huge component of my first year in office. And I was thrilled to be a part of that. Franklin also was one of the first things I started asking about when we knew the bill was coming out and started having conversations about that charter reimbursement piece. And this is really a comprehensive statement from the legislature that we would look forward thinking and generate meaningful education equity in the state. And it's just such an honor to have been part of this process. And that fairness is really central to Franklin and to all of our municipalities, including all of the towns that are in the neighboring area. And my district is quite unique and long and skinny, so I have lots of different schools and lots of different folks and regional schools and charter schools and district schools and all different kinds of schools. And so when I sat down with the Senate Chair of the Education Committee, and I said, well, tell me about every piece of this, because every piece of this puzzle is going to touch my district. And so I was, as Senator Spilka mentioned, pleased to see the pieces on charter reimbursement and the pieces that are going to address the special education reimbursements and other pieces that really directly impact Franklin. Briefly, I really think about education in so many important ways. You heard earlier in the introductory remarks about taking care of our teachers. That also is a part of the Student Opportunity Act. One of the things that that we did in this funding formula is to address the rising cost of healthcare for our teachers and make sure that that's accounted for in the funding that's provided from the state. Sort of adjacent to the Student Opportunity Act, I've been working on a couple of things as well related to education. You heard the $50,000 for the vaping prevention program. I was thrilled to get an update from the folks here in town as to how those dollars have been spent to promote and safeguard the health of our youth. And a couple of other related projects, generating additional spaces for STEM education and hands-on learning. We also passed Breakfast After the Bell, which is an important component to make sure that our students have the food and nutrition that they need. And some things that we're starting to hear about now and starting to sort of look at is school lunches and school start times. And so there's always more to do. And I am quite excited and honored to represent Franklin jointly with this amazing team and to always be proud of what we've accomplished and looking forward into the next frontier of the next things that we need to keep going and keep doing to make sure that our students and our families and our faculty and our administration are all getting the supports that you need.
You beat the clock.
Beat the clock. All right.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here. I love the Franklin School System. Spent 10 years of my life on the school committee here, and it was some of the most rewarding work that I've ever done. And I bless each and every one of you who now serve on the school committee, and welcome to a great job. One thing I will say, and I could not come here and not talk and give you at least a quote from Horace Mann. So Massachusetts doesn't have silver mines and gold mines and coal mines, and Horace Mann, you know, over 100 years ago was talking about the fact that we don't have those mines, but here's what he said about it. One copious, exhaustless fountain supplies all this abundance. It is education, the intellectual, moral, and religious education of the people. Having no other minds to work, Massachusetts has mined into the human intellect, and from its limitless resources, she has won more sustaining and enduring prosperity and happiness than if she had been founded on a stratification of silver and gold, reaching deeper down than geology has yet penetrated. So I think that's a good start for a meeting such as this. I was blessed with the assignment to be the chair of higher education, so it allows me to continue the work. And I'll talk about a few things that we have done. And I was doing a checklist as Senator Spilker and Senator Rausch were talking, so I won't go back to those other pieces. But one of the pieces that we did at higher ed that will affect folks like you, and you three up in the back, is we have faced the prospect of colleges closing, and some have predicted that between 25% and 50% of colleges will close. And Mount Ida closed abruptly, and it affected a Franklin student. And I heard from the president of Dean College. And one of the things that we needed to do was to increase the financial stability and transparency of these events. So we passed a major college closure bill that will require colleges to go through a screening process on an annual basis so that we can prevent a Mount Ida situation from ever happening again. Sarah did mention the Student-Centered Learning Commission. I'm happy to say that the report came out just last week. And I'm also happy to say that your superintendent is ahead of the curve, because one of the things that we encourage in the report is to the portrait of a graduate. And Dr. Hearn was talking about portrait of a graduate when we were doing the focus group. So far ahead of the curve here in Franklin. Another thing that we're doing as a higher ed committee is we're touring all 29 state colleges and universities in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Just last Friday, I was at your school, Bridgewater State University. That was School 17 and 18 out of the 29 will be done on March 6th. We reported out an early college bill from the Higher Ed Committee today, so we're going to try to get more high schools to participate and give college credit to students while they're in high school. The menstrual products in schools bill was reported out by the Education Committee, and that is requiring all schools to have and give disposable menstrual products free of charge in the restrooms in all schools in the Commonwealth. We did the civics law last year, and it's good to see that some high school students are here today fulfilling their civics requirement in their course. I know that you have interest in employment opportunities. Another bill that have been working on is to try to give financial incentives to traditional school districts to offer industry recognized credentials to students so that they can leave high school and either get college credit for that work or walk into a job. We did also fund $50,000 for the SAFE Coalition in the community, and I know that we have a very active peer-to-peer group here in Franklin High School, and thrilled that they're working in tandem with the task force, the substance use task force, which I'm happy to sit on that with Lucas. Another report that I would advise, this one just came out last week also, this is the condition of education in the Commonwealth. Anybody who wants copies of these reports to see what's happening, just let me know. I'd be happy to email you electronic copies. The teen sexting bill that you referred to was reported out on January 30th, so we're making progress there. And I will stop because I'm sure I'll have an opportunity to answer some questions and fill you in on the rest. You're the only one up.
Success.
Thank you, everyone, for your opening remarks and to speaking to the education issues that have us here tonight. In the interest of time, I'm going to go ahead and start with the questions. So the first question, the governor's budget was just released. Could you provide a little background for us? For example, on the Student Opportunity Act, details of the budget, where things could be headed, and how this will affect communities such as Franklin.
I guess I'll take that.
All looking at Karen.
we don't always talk about all of this, but as was mentioned, the governor's budget is step one, phase one of a long process. He works with his administration. We had talked about an approximate amount that would need to be put in to the budget for the 7-year phase-in for the Student Opportunity Act and the $1.5 billion. Each branch, the governor, as was mentioned, released his budget last week. The House will do their budget in April, the Senate in May. We anticipate each one will have approximately $300 million for the phase-in of the Student Opportunity Act. And if you think about it, last year, without any tax increase, without any big revenue increase, we were able to put about $280 million in the final conference committee budget that the House and Senate agreed upon to start moving the ball forward. Even though we had not passed the Student Opportunity Act, it was still important for us to start moving the ball forward, particularly in the areas of helping low-income students and English learners. And that those are the areas that hopefully and finally will get rid of the persistent achievement gap that has been in Massachusetts, despite all efforts of putting funding in and other things. So in terms of funding, it's hard to know exactly how this will play out. I know the governor phased in the healthcare costs, special education, and English language learners. 3 out of 4 did 1/7 of each amount to have 7 years, in the long run, have it fully funded. For the low-income students, there were a lot of problems the last few years. This may be getting into the weeds a little bit, but this is why it may change a little. I'm a policy wonk, I'm sorry. It may change when the House and Senate does it, because so many students were not being counted that the administration decided to take all of the students in one fell swoop, which was almost like 40,000 students in the Commonwealth, and count them, so a lot of the funding went there instead. So it's gonna, we're gonna have to, in some of the following years, put more than 1/7 of the full amount into the English language learning. But that's where most of the funding will go. So I know the House is working on it, the Senate, there are discussions between the House and Senate. Ideally, it would be great if we could come to some agreement. I'm a prior school committee member. I remember the years when we would have the joint early resolution so that cities and towns would know what their funding was earlier rather than later and could, you know, take that to the bank. We'll see, this is a transition year, so it might be a little harder to do that. But so that's what will happen. I believe that there will be, you know, funding for charter reimbursement. That's only 3-year implementation. And we changed it to 100, back to what was the original reimbursement, 100%, 60%, and then 40. And the sped circuit breaker, again, every single school district will benefit from including the out-of-district transportation costs. And Franklin will get, you know, a decent amount of an increase for that as well, starting this year when the budget comes out. So, you know, and we also had the $30 minimum aid guarantee. So even if communities won't see big increases in the regular formula, we have the minimum aid of $30 built into the formula. If times are great and we could do more, we would do that, but at least each community would see that increase. So it's hard to know exactly where it will turn out, but I do think that, you know, what the governor's budget came out with at least would be a floor.
A couple of other pieces that I'd like to call your attention to because they deal with education. And one is the governor is proposing an extra $2.3 million for early college programs to try and get an extra 1,600 kids into early college programs, and school districts have to apply to be an early college designee, so that might be something you want to think about. And another one that is somewhat interesting, but I'm a little skeptical of relative to the financing, are these career technical institutes. You may have heard it from the State of the State address. I just started. I get my 5 minutes. That could not possibly have been 5 minutes.
5 minutes per question.
You both shared it.
Oh, per question. Per question. You took my time.
I didn't know.
Well, let me finish that
Give
answer.
Give them another minute.
It's important. It's important. So the proposal is to take Volk schools and have the Volk students attend from 8 to 2. And then from 2 to 5 or 6, have traditional high school students go to that school to do a trade. And then in the evenings, to have adults come in that want to pursue a trade. So when I was inquiring about it, the funding mechanism, because I said, well, who's going to pay for these kids who go from 2 to 5? And the way they are proposing to work it is that the Chapter 70 money for that particular student would be divided between the traditional public school and the vocational school. So my question to the secretary was, what is the incentive for Franklin to take a cut in Chapter 70 to send a kid over to the Volk school? So that's a question that I would ask that you think about and try to give me some feedback as to whether that's a program that I think would fit in Franklin.
And then just to add on top of it, the adult part in the evening, I mean, they would need to come up with funds for that too, so we're not certain where that would come from.
The Bank of Beth.
Yeah.
I left it at the other education forum.
Thank you. All right, second question. As towns become wealthier based upon property values and median income, The state asks those towns to step up to the plate and increase their own revenues. How does this apply to Franklin?
I'm sure that my esteemed colleagues will have something to add to this, but this is in fact the thing that the Student Opportunity Act was specifically designed to address, right? The whole point underlying the Student Opportunity Act was to generate education equity so that it does not matter what your zip code is, all of the students in Massachusetts get the same quality of public education. That's what we did. And now we're starting to see the funding. We have the governor's funding proposal. We'll see how the House budget comes out. We'll see how the Senate budget comes out and how all of those get reconciled as we head into the spring and the summer. But this is the specific thing, right? The quintessential focus of the legislation that we just passed a couple of months ago.
That's okay. A good answer.
I love that answer.
Great.
All right. Next question. It is short-sighted to think that students.
Can I buy that time.
See the time.
The rollover. Rollover. It is short-sighted to think that students will learn all the skills they need to succeed in their careers by the time they leave high school. And I know I didn't. How are you supporting various pathways apart from the traditional four-year college route, which is not ideal for all students? Is there support for certificate programs, community colleges, vocational opportunities? I know you have a lot to say on that.
I would love to.
So
I did talk about what the governor was proposing with regard to the career technical institutes. But another piece of legislation that we're working on, probably as part of an economic development bill, is this notion of providing financial incentives to traditional public schools to offer industry recognized credentials to students. And the proposal that's in the bill is to provide $750 for each industry credential that a school district would produce. So if Franklin High has a class that they do CNC machining or coding or some other field that has an industry recognized credential, they'll get $750 for each of those students that will do it. So if 20 kids do it, that's $15,000. And that's a financial incentive for you to do it. Because we know that in Massachusetts, 74% of the jobs will require some credential beyond a high school diploma. That's a given. And we also know that with a level of credential, the higher your level of credential, the greater your earnings are over the course of your lifetime. So we want to encourage folks to get something beyond a high school diploma, and I think this industry credentials piece would be vital to providing that for students in any traditional high school, and they don't have to go to a voc tech to get that training.
But there also has been a focus, I think, on voc tech. You know, it sort of cycles around, and for many years, voc techs were not considered, you know, the strength of the community. And the last few years, more and more voc techs are really proving that they are a training ground. Whether the students want to go into work right after high school, they come out with many terrific skills, or move to community colleges. And Franklin is lucky to be the home to Tri-County, which I think is one of the best voc tech schools in the state. I remember going to the grand opening of the renovated engineering lab and advanced manufacturing last year and seeing all that was being done and the robotics program and everything. So we're trying to do more and more of that, and actually waiting lists for voc tech schools are increasing now. So, you know, that is why the push is to use the voc tech schools where they have the equipment. We just need to figure out, it's a great idea, you know, and I support using them for more and more of the hours and not leaving them idle, but we need to figure out a reasonable, I don't feel like we should be taking funds from one school to go to another school personally. And our future clearly depends upon a skilled workforce. So we're looking at you know, helping the Voc Tech schools accommodate the students that want to be there, helping our regular schools accommodate and providing more STEM resources and more computer science. Computer science and coding are some of the areas that we need to ensure that there is a workforce for, not only now, but in the near future and long-term future. We look at other things and try to look holistically, I guess, so that providing funds in the budget for youth for summer jobs so that they get the skills during the summer and keep going. We have a workforce competitive trust fund, which focuses on training for workers and creates career pathways for workers to make sure that they can move up to higher and stable jobs. We have a precision manufacturing to connect young adults and others with high-tech manufacturing. We have great internship programs in the biotech sector through the Life Sciences Center was the first state organization that did it, and that was so successful it spread to the Clean Energy Center. So we have summer, we have jobs and internships all year round for college students, and they're paying jobs, and kids can get an experience in the clean energy sector now too. And that was so successful that a few years back I pushed to add the tech sector so that it's now in the tech sector for students. And this will keep kids in Massachusetts in fields that we know are growing. But that just gives you a smattering of what we look at in trying to ensure that we have the skilled workforce both currently and in the future that we need.
One other piece that I would mention, Student Opportunity Act has...
That's why I didn't start talking. You gotta beat the 5-minute mark.
It has a 21st Century Education Trust Fund. So if you as a school district have a creative idea as to how you can address these workforce needs, there's a pot of money that's out there that will fund it. It's part of that Student Opportunity
Act. Right, and we put $10 million in that in our closeout budget last fall. So.
Thank you.
It's a lot happening.
Schools have become the front line for social services. The demands are enormous, given the high academic standards for Massachusetts schools. Do you foresee ways to support communities to address mental health issues in our schools?
We're looking at you.
These are issues that you know, I think all of us recognize are critical to the success of our kids and their future and all of our communities. We have focused on, like in the Student Opportunity Act, one thing that I pushed for was there, when you figure out the formula for what each town has to pay and what their foundation budget is and the amount the town pays or the city pays and then the amount that the state pays, there's all these different rates and rates to how much should they be paying for teachers and janitors and this and that. We increased the rate for student counselors. That was one of the few areas that we increased because I know and we know how important it is to get more counselors in schools. We put millions of dollars the last few supplemental budgets into increasing school counselors and folks that will be there to help our kids. We recognize that more and more students are the front line. My son is a teacher. He's a teacher in New York City, but he teaches in the public school system in New York City. So I know what an incredibly challenging and yet rewarding job it is to teach kids. It's great, but more and more issues pop up. So that's why, for me, we are doing, and on Thursday, hopefully you'll see it in the paper or you know, read about it, hear about it. We are unveiling a mental health reform bill as part of our three bills for healthcare reform. We were going to really focus a lot on kids, but we found that the system itself is so broken that we need to first, I see a lot of you shaking your heads, unfortunately, it's true. We need to first sort of fix the base of the system before we start piling a whole lot on. So I foresee every year, at least as long as I'm Senate President, I have 7 more years, to be doing a mental health reform bill, because I think it's so important. But this bill will increase access, it will address the work, some workforce trying to get more folks in. We put a $10 million salary, a $10 million reserve in the budget for programs that some of this bill will pull from that $10 million. That way, I didn't know what this year was gonna be like. We knew we had the money last year when we did it, so to set aside the $10 million, so when we do this bill, the funding is there. Some of it will go to tuition remission for folks going into the field of service in this field. Some of it will go towards other areas. So we're looking at credentialing and getting people credentialed faster. We're looking at emergency departments and how to get kids out of the emergency departments and into care quickly, because we've all heard of stories of kids sitting in emergency departments. You know, I recently heard of one, 45 days. That was sickening. 45 days. That just is not acceptable. So there will be some movement specifically for kids, but we're looking mostly at getting more people into it and faster into the workforce, easing some of the paperwork maybe so that more people are willing to take people and not have every health insurance require different paperwork. So we're looking at that type of information and stuff in this. And then next year continues. So, you know, I invite all of you, if you have ideas for successive healthcare mental health reform bills, please share them. Feel free to contact me or my office. We're always interested in hearing stories. The two things that I am really focusing on are breaking the stigma, breaking the silence. My father had mental illness and he never sought treatment because he was a big, strong man, and big, strong men don't have problems, it was everybody else. And so I realize how that can impact a family, and that happens repeatedly across so many families in every community, and unfortunately it's equal opportunity there. And so breaking the stigma, there's money for a mental health awareness public campaign, we'll be rolling that out in May, Mental Health Awareness Month, and then parity, finally treating mental health the same as we do physical health.
I just wanna lift up this breaking the stigma piece. I think it's particularly important for youth. My children are just entering the education system. My oldest just started kindergarten this year, so I'm at the beginning of the public school process as a parent. But I'm a product of public schools. Anyway, kids have amazing compassion when they're very young. And as they get older, they become more and more and more susceptible to stigma and fear and all of these things that make it hard to address mental health needs. So I'm particularly excited to see this this component of this legislative package coming out from the Senate.
It's the high pay I'm getting.
Doing a great job.
Well deserved.
If you look at all the mandates, regulations, and expectations put on public schools in the last 20 years, how can we make our legislators appreciate the tremendous strain it's taking on our educators? Is there an understanding that low morale and stress is forcing many out of the profession? Is attention being paid to the well-being of our teachers?
Well, I'll start with the mandate piece, because as a former school committee member, and I'm sure Senator Spilka had the same views when we were on the school committee, you always look and you say, how can you keep dictating what we need to do without sending the requisite funding? So you'll see a lot of stuff that comes out nowadays has the phrase in it, subject to appropriation. There are certain things that we do have expectations that are going to be done for you to have a well-rounded student. And, you know, I can point to a couple of bills that I listed, the disposable menstrual products. That's going to be a mandate. That's going to cost school districts money. But it's the right thing to do. And many school districts do it. Another bill that I have been pursuing is the Genocide Education Act, mandating the teaching of genocide in all public schools, with the belief that no child should leave K to 12 without exposure to genocide education. It's a level of humanity. There are some topics that should just be there. Good school districts do that. I know that Franklin already does it. It's in the curriculum frameworks. But some of these things that just have to serve as reminders. We don't do it to punish school districts, but it's, you know, one of those requirements. One of the things that learning from that student-centered learning commission was personalized education. And one of the pieces that come out of it, we do individualized education plans, IEPs, for special education students. I think we should do IEPs for every student and, you know, meet the student where they are and form a plan for how that student is going to get through the system. Personalize the education for that student. That'll be viewed as a mandate. There's no bill filed. There's not even on the table. It's just a thought at this particular time. But it's all towards the goal of keeping Massachusetts at the top of the heap. We are number one in education throughout the nation. We have been number one in the nation since they started keeping records and scores about how students are doing. And we don't rest on our laurels. We are always seeking to improve. And education is really the foundation for every community. Franklin has benefited wildly from being well known and recognized as a high performing school district. And property values in this community have gone through the roof. I'll ask any real estate broker in the room, what's the first question that people ask you when they're looking to buy a house? What's the education system like? So it's always to maintain high standards, and it's always to make sure that we educate our children to the best, because they are taking over for the future, and we have an obligation. Our Constitution is one of few in the entire nation that has a constitutional right to an education embedded within the words of that instrument. And we take it seriously, and we want only the best for our students.
I just want to add that the 4 years that I was chair of Ways and Means, when potential mandates came up, being a prior school committee member and being on the opposite side of where I am now and talking with my legislators about unfunded mandates, we tried not to do an unfunded mandate. So items that we did during those years are things like the ESPERT evaluation, but we put funding in to train nurses and to train people. The civics was not a mandate. It ended up not being a mandate, but, you know, so that's one of the ways that we are trying to be sensitive. But Franklin is getting almost $30 million every year from the state for educating its kids. And granted, you know, there's so many things that you need to do, and staff and you know, services and programs and everything else. But so we're trying to not pile on for that as much as possible. If there are areas, again, that you really believe that can be alleviated, I remember years ago we looked at some of the unfunded or some of the mandates, and there was some suggestions, like there was some forms that had to be filled out every year that was required by the Department of Early and Secondary Education. If there's something that, you know, that this is just one example, we were able to change it to every 2 years or 3 years, things like that to let up the pressure on staff and whatever. So if there are if there's things like that or other things that you're aware of, let us know, and we could either meet with DESE or do something to try to help out.
Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to open it up for citizens' questions, comments. I just ask that you try to keep it on topic and not disclose any personal student information. So if anyone has any questions, you can come on up to one of the microphones.
Class dismissed.
Hi. In 10 days is the anniversary of the Parkland shooting, which matters to me because I moved here from Parkland. So as an early childhood educator, I have a two-part question. First of all, I didn't hear you talk at all about early childhood education, which I assume is because of the forum, but I hoped you might add a little bit of that because I think that's important. Mm-hmm. And secondarily, I hoped you would give us some more information on the social-emotional learning that you sort of touched on, that I'm kind of interested in more in the details, especially as it relates to preventing tragedies. And I'm sorry.
You know, the early education and care, eventually I would love to have every kid getting early education universal across the state, and the state would help fund that. We certainly would pull that off and just put it on all of our communities. We've been trying to put more funding, particularly for the teachers, because what we found was we were putting funding towards increasing classes. But unless you have the teachers to fill those classes, you can't keep doing that. So we've been systematically trying to increase that with the goal of having it as universal. We know that the best return on investment, not only is it healthier for our young kids, but the best return on investment is to getting our young kids early intervention and early education. It helps them so much for the rest of their educational careers, the rest of their lives, and cuts down the costs for the Commonwealth over the lifetime of that person. So, I mean, for every reason, it just makes so much sense. It is a matter of scarce resources, to be honest with you. Putting the $1.5 billion towards K-12, we need to invest in early education and care to have it universal. We need to invest a lot more in our public higher education. I'm a product of public higher ed. I firmly believe in it. We need to reduce the costs for all of our kids, whether they go to community colleges, university, or the UMass system. We need to deal with that as well. And then the social and emotional learning, I started 4 years ago, and this is just one thing. As was noted, Metro West Kids Initiative, and we started by having specialists on social and emotional learning coming, and every year we do it, and we try to have some issues, some for parents and some for others, to highlight. And this year, just a few weeks ago, it was giving tools to parents. You know, kids are so stressed out between the social media, between school and their peers and pressure. It's worse than ever. And they can't get away with it. I know when I went to school, I went home, I could watch TV, I could read, I could whatever. I didn't have somebody texting me all the time, or Facebook, or Instagram, or all the other ones that they now have that I don't even know about. So we're trying to provide tools for parents, and trying to provide tools for DESE to be reaching out to the schools more to help with social and emotional learning.
This condition of education report I would recommend, because there's a whole section in the report on steps that some school districts are taking in that particular area, but definitely worth
I'll just add, as a parent of a child still in early ed, my little one is still in daycare, you know, I feel the pressure on families' budgets. I feel the pressure on the teachers to provide more with less, and you know, the funding that Senator Spilka mentioned to provide additional funds for early education teachers, that was one of my budget priorities going into last year's budget. You know, it's complicated, and it's hard to figure out what the right solution is. But I do continue to hear from parents and caregivers and teachers and administrators in the early education realm, lots of different ideas coming in, or at least lots of different concerns, trying to figure out what the what the right idea is to move the ball forward to ensure that that all of our families are supported is difficult. But as has been said, we welcome suggestions. Aha! Three of us got in 5 minutes.
We're learning.
Hi, I have a special education question. I'm in a group that kind of helps other moms and gets laws passed for what happens to our SPED kids once they become adults or if they're in. Right now, this last fiscal year, 2,241 cases were called in to abuse that goes on, where SPED kids were hurt in their residential settings or in their day programs. It's a real, real problem. And I feel like our kids, right now, I mean, the federal government passed a law where if you hurt an animal, you can be arrested. Our kids don't have a voice. Because if they can't speak, my daughter's autistic, they can't testify against anyone. So we just got Nikki's law passed. I know you're on the Disabilities Committee. I didn't see you at any of our meetings on Nikki's law, and I didn't see any of your priorities on disabilities. I just wondered if you're gonna get involved at all, Senator Rausch.
So I did support Nikki's law, voted for it in favor in the committee, also voted for it in the Senate floor.
Yeah, I saw a tweet about it. And I was at every hearing.
So I have been at many of those hearings. I appreciate the question. I do serve on 7 committees, and I have leadership roles on 2 of them. I admittedly have not made it to every single hearing of every committee on which I sit. I did have... I certainly reviewed testimony on Nikki's law, was very proud and honored to have the opportunity to vote for it first in committee and then again on the floor. And
well, our kids are being killed in their day health program. So I would really appreciate that, since you're on that board, please start to make it a priority. You know, fat shaming, not a priority when we mothers come from this whole state, Beacon Hill, to try to protect our kids. And I don't want to see any special ed kid here end up going through what my friends have to go through.
No, I wouldn't.
So please make it a priority.
And we have passed that bill, and I'm very glad that we've passed that bill.
Hi. Kind of related to the SPED question, I think a group of SPED are gifted children, and if I'm not mistaken, Massachusetts is one of 5 states in the country that has absolutely no mandate at the state level for gifted SPED education. I know there are individual towns who do, but, and I could be mistaken on this, I was wondering if there's been any thought about you know, bringing in, you know, gifted programs, making some sort of a mandate the state level.
You have a friend right over here.
We know each other.
Okay.
So you know that several bills have been filed on this. I'm starting to sort of develop my depth of knowledge in this area, but there's certainly a conversation happening.
Right, and I think Commonwealth Magazine did a piece on it talking about where Massachusetts is at on that particular issue. And a comprehensive report was issued in June of 2019, and I understand that the Commissioner of Elementary and Secondary Education is making this a priority of his, so I'm sure you're going to hear more on that conversation. And I'll tell you one other piece that we released out of the Higher Ed Committee is inclusive concurrent enrollment for kids with intellectual disabilities that want the college experience. We are going to promote that. We're going to codify, if it gets through the House and the Senate, the bill proposes to codify that program to allow more kids to pursue college and get something beyond high school. So look for more in that area as well.
Anyone else?
This will be on the test tomorrow.
Putting him on the spot.
So being a senior at Franklin High School and you guys talking about the $50,000 fund that was allocated for vaping, I was just wondering what that was being spent on.
I had the same question, so we called and we asked. And thank you for the question. So as I understand it, and I think we have some folks in the room who will correct me if I'm wrong, there was a vaping prevention presentation made to three middle schools and the high school, and also a parent meeting to educate parents about vaping harm and vaping prevention. Apparently, turnout was a little low, unfortunately, but the funding was used to make a booklet made by local substance abuse task force to be sent out and distributed. So there's an informational component. Some of the funding was used to purchase and install vaping detectors, so the faculty and administration can figure out some problem spots, I guess, in the school. There was an internal training provided to teach teachers and staff about how to detect vaping in school grounds and how to help students who are dealing with potential addiction resulting from or related at least to the vaping. And I believe there's also some works happening now to develop and implement a vaping diversion program that would replace suspension. Right? So we have a sort of more holistic view of helping kids who are dealing with this very serious problem. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I want to get back to the social emotional well-being of the younger students. I'm a 31-year veteran kindergarten teacher.
Thank you.
And it'll kind of dovetail into the social emotional well-being of staff. So particularly pre-K, K-1 and a little bit of 2. So kids over the years themselves biologically, physically haven't changed. And we know that Massachusetts is very high up in the curriculum and the standards in what we do. However, we're asking kids to do things that they are not cognitively ready to do, realistically. We can expose them to a lot of things. That's causing a lot of social emotional stress. It's causing a lot of anxiety. New Hampshire, 2, maybe 3 years ago, changed legislation and went back to a play-based, developmentally appropriate curriculum. Is there any kind of discussion at the state level on looking into that for kids in Massachusetts? And one of the other reasons I ask is that I'm on a statewide task force for MTA looking to do that for kids. Because then that then goes to the well-being of the teachers who are doing things with kids that we know they're not ready to do.
What she said.
I think that would be more DESE, the Department of Early and Secondary Education Regulation. They set curriculum, not the legislature. So my first response would be to, if you're involved with the MTA, to work with them and work with DESE to find out what the thinking is. I don't know specifically what you're talking about in terms of actions, but to first work with them and see if there can be some change and movement in that way before we would legislate, you know, make some legislation.
Would it have to go through DESE before the legislation, I guess?
If it's a regulation, that's the state agents, we make the general laws usually, and then the state agencies that are responsible for the implementation do the regulations to implement the laws. So they're supposed to hold hearings beforehand, publicize what regulations they want to do, invite the public in. So I don't know specifically if you want to follow up on this, we certainly can, you know, afterwards or you know, later on or something to find out more specifically what you're referring to.
If that's I would helpful. Love to follow up. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if your question has something to do with the notion of seat time and whether you need a relaxation of seat time, because that's a common complaint that I hear about different types of programs that are not geared towards core subject areas, that, oh no, we need to get X number of hours in a classroom doing core instruction. Is that?
It's not necessarily that. I know New Hampshire switched their, not switched, they went through many hearings to get their legislation to address the needs of the younger students.
If you can get more details on it, I'd
right.
love
sure.
to
yeah. I mean, it's hard to respond without yeah. details, but
sure.
we can follow up. On.
I'd love that. Thank
yeah.
you.
Any other questions?
One of the problems that we face in Franklin is a number of kids and of families that have food insecurity issues. And I know there have been some things like the breakfast after the bell, but there's community partnerships that do a lot of keep picking up the slack to help the families that are food insecure. And also, I was recently at a conference where I learned that this is also a huge problem in higher ed, where the students are food insecure. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you could speak about what the legislature is doing to help with this.
Well, I can speak to higher ed because in touring 18 of the schools, all 18 of them have food insecurity issues. All 18 of them have food pantries, which are extremely busy on the campuses. One of the bills that we reported out today was to do a food insecurity pilot program at the college level at higher ed, because we recognize, and a theme I've heard over and over and over again is, you can't learn if you're hungry. And hearing these stories about students living in their cars and you know, not knowing where they're going to sleep at night, not knowing where their next meal is coming, not being able to afford a meal plan at a school is tragic. And you know, it's something that we are definitely honing in on, and I think this pilot program is a good start. But it all goes back to funding higher education, and you know, I think we can do better. And, there's a commitment to do better. People will bark that it will cost money, but I think it's worth it.
Anyone else?
I was hopeful to be able to just speak in the citizens' comments and be out of here. But I wanted to request the school committee perhaps start looking at expanding the school year from the current 180 days on out. I know that, you know, someone who's not an educator and works in the private sector, I'm accustomed to working a full year of 260 days. I think it's about the average that you would do. And I think that if you were taking a look at something like that, and you were looking at compensating teachers based on a full year's work and full salary, you'd have a system that would ensure that you're getting the best qualified candidates possible. And on the other end, for students, it would then give them the time necessary to delve into subjects that you want to discuss, but you can't. Right? And things like civics, which you end up doing outside of the classroom, or personal finance. So anyway, I was interested in finding out if the school committee has thought about this. And if they were interested, you as legislatures, is there a funding vehicle if a school department, school district, a town wanted to experiment with that type of thing?
There's the 21st century fund for innovative instruction, and but it would have to come from the grassroots communities for different programs and things that they wanted to do.
You know, I hear what you're saying. That's very complicated to do on a lot of different levels. I know it's been hard for even schools to extend or switch the times for, you know, the high schools used to start so early and all that's involved. I know.
The pain.
You know, so there's a lot involved, but certainly, you know, our times are changing, so, you know, I appreciate the question.
Any other questions?
Thanks for coming here. I never thought about this before, but I bet that Franklin is one of the few municipalities that has a both tech and a charter school. And it's great that we have all these in town, but it's a, you know, big strain on our resources. So how can we balance the needs of all these different institutions with the limited budgets that we have?
Well, your Volk School, you'll be happy to know, is funded by 13 communities. So Franklin only funds what they send there. The charter school, I'm not sure how many it is. They expanded their reach. It's probably 7 or 8 towns that go.
There's 13 towns.
13 towns go to the charter school?
It's a regional, it's 13 towns.
13 towns. So, you know, the lion's share of them are indeed from Franklin. But, you know, we try to set up an equitable distribution of those funds and reimburse communities with the charter school reimbursement monies that they get. I think the amazing thing for people who live in this community is the breadth of choice that they have to meet opportunities that meet the needs of any particular family. Not many communities have this many choices, and you did leave out the agricultural school, which is down the street in Walpole. That's another public option for families in this community.
Anyone else? Okay. I think that's it. All right.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. And if you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008. And used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.